Alan Astana here. This is the Veterinary Voices podcast, and we have Jenny Guyot on with us, who is a vet who set up a Vet Harmony, and she does some work for VetLed as well. Do you want to introduce what you do, Jenny?
Hi, Danny. Yes. So with my Vet Harmony work, I suppose it's best encapsulated. There's a quote from Maya Angelou that success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it. And in a nutshell, that's what I help. Mainly vets, sometimes nurses, and sometimes non-vets, but predominantly vets, to find their sweet spot, I suppose, in their careers.
So these are people who, mainly vets and vet nurses, who are looking at exploring other options sort of outside of clinical practice, and you help them do that. Is that it in a nutshell, really?
I think I sort of get two groups of people coming to me. I get people where they're not sure if they're happy in their clinical work anymore, and they don't really know what to do about that, or whether the problem is them, or whether it is the clinical work. So they might want to change or diversify. I also get plenty of people who are actually quite happy in their clinical work, but they want to work on a particular aspect. So maybe it's their mindset and their confidence, or maybe they are new into, for example, a clinical director role, and they're new into management or leadership, or they've got an idea. I kind of do a blended mix of life coaching, career coaching, business coaching. So those are my two sort of main type of people I help.
So that's really interesting. So you've got people who are staying in clinical practice, but moving on to a different role within clinical practice, and need some support and coaching to do that. I suppose it's a big decision for someone to change a role from being in, especially in first opinion clinical practice, because many of us wanted to be vets from when we're children. When did you first know you wanted to be a vet? Like, how old were you?
I was about four. My dad was a farm manager. And so we lived in Lincolnshire, in a really rural area, and I used to go on farms all the time, see pigs farrowing and dairy herds and stuff, and just absolutely loved it. And I was actually quite cross that I couldn't be a farmer's daughter, but I decided being a vet would be the next best thing. But tender age of four.
Well, that's similar to me. I grew up on a farm, and I absolutely loved science at school, and so I guess it's a kind of merge of the sort of animal background with science. But yeah, so it's quite typical that so wanted to be a vet from when you're 4 years old, you knew that. So then when you get to the point in your career, I mean, if you want to be a vet since before you got into vet school, and you take your GCSEs, your A-levels, you do all your work experience with the aim of becoming a vet, it actually becomes part of your own personal identity. That means it is more than just a job. And I guess that affects how you make decisions on your career going forward. Would you agree with that?
Yes, massively. I think it becomes woven into the fabric of who you are. And often for many of us, we've really had to strive to get into vet school. Myself, I had to go and take retakes to get in.
Me too.
Did you? We have a lot of similarities.
Yeah. My chemistry A-level.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. For me, it was physics. And then I think I was probably in rotations in fourth year when I started to have a few collywobbles, but in terms of the realities of veterinary practice. But by then, it's like a blooming great freight train pushing you along from behind. And I loved the profession as well. And I think then when you're kind of self-actualizing through this hugely vocational profession that you often have wanted to do since childhood, quite often when it starts to not, if there's aspects of it that don't feel right or things that you find difficult, often it's too difficult to even contemplate that because our brain can't go there to start with. It's kind of like, I've chosen this, I'm doing it, just got to suck it up. And it is part of our identity. And I think actually we can renegotiate the terms a little bit when we need to.
Yeah, so it's a much bigger than just changing jobs as a mindset, isn't it? And I suppose it's the same as when someone makes a complaint against you. It's so much of your personal identity. It's not someone complaining just about your job or the job you've done. You see, it's a sort of personal reflection on yourself and your character.
It is, until you start to do the work to unpick your sense of self from being a vet. So, and that's when I talk about kind of renegotiating the terms of your veterinary identity. When your sense of self is entire and in your own self-worth is woven into your vet identity, it feels extremely vulnerable, very painful and difficult to have any form of criticism, judgment. Once you start to do the work to separate those two things, so that there is that sense of self and there is your veterinary identity, but they're not intertwined anymore, then we can start to actually be more compassionate with ourselves and our humanness, but also compassionate with clients, because often they're complaining, it's not directly personal to us. They might be dealing with stuff in their life. We're a distress purchase. They didn't want their pet to be sick. They don't have the money. That gets funneled at us and we take it very personally, especially when your sense of self is wrapped up in it too. Once those are separate, it actually makes it easier for us to stay in compassion. And I feel like if I'd have known that in my early days of being a vet, I don't think I would have struggled with it as much as I did.
I see. And so when people come to you for sort of guidance and advice because they're potentially considering options outside of clinical practice or trying to work out how to make clinical practice work for them because they're struggling, but sort of what stage in their career is that? Do you find that there's, you know, does it happen early on or later on?
So I tend to pick people up somewhere between the 5 to 15 years graduated point. So not in the new grad phase, but just as that knowledge base starts to plateau, or maybe, you know, you've been doing it a decade, you've seen most things once. And that tends to be where I find the sense of disillusionment or disconnection or just not being sure can start to creep in.
I see. And so at that point, they're sort of feeling like I enjoyed this for a while, but I can do it now. I don't know if this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, but I don't know what's, you know, why is it not fulfilling all my dreams? Is that the kind of attitude they have?
I think basically we spend the first part of our career, our childhood, our teens, are going through university, and the first bit of becoming a vet, if you go into clinical practice, being what's needed from us. So we have to take specific subjects. We have to choose from a narrow range of universities. We then have to get through finals and then we go out into practice, and often you're being what's needed of you by the profession, by your first job. And in that process, we've often had to surrender aspects of self, or who we truly are underneath the vet identity, in order to achieve the vet identity in the first place. And so often there might be aspects of the type of practice that you've chosen or the place where you're working that completely don't fit your physiology, your mental, physical, emotional well-being. But we've lost ourselves a little bit. So I think the reason that it kicks in at that stage is you've done the achieving bit and you're then moving into living the rest of your life, you know, or the next phase of your life. And if there are things that are out of alignment, we've never had to think about it before, don't know what the solutions are, maybe don't know which parts of yourself are not aligning well. And so there's a whole kind of self-discovery, self-reflection piece of work that I think we're invited to do at that stage of our career.
So I guess at that point, you're at a sort of point where you can either think about how do you want to sort of balance the rest of your life with your veterinary job, or there's often a temptation to kind of double down and go, well, I need to do a certificate or a residency and get better at, you know, for more fulfillment.
Definitely. Absolutely. I've done both of those things.
So you've done that as well, have you?
Yeah, absolutely. Started heading down the residency pathway. Realised for various reasons after my internship that wasn't going to work, went back into practice, but as you say, signed up for a certificate. That, you know, the narrative that we have, and I think the professional culture that we have. I was speaking to a client yesterday. I asked her why she was doing her medicine certificate, and she said, well, that's just what everyone else is doing. You know, that there's sort of a narrative that our growth is always linearly upwards, more qualification, more validation via qualification, and actually that's just one direction of growth. I think what I help people to do at that stage where they want to make that switch from making their life decision and career decisions based on what's needed from them externally to doing it the other way around, coming from within, going, right, who am I, how does my head work, what's important to me, what aspects of work really light me up and put me in flow, what aspects completely drain me and really stress me out, and how do I want to live my life? What do I want to experience? And then to start to retrofit your skills and experience to that, that's a massive switch. And it's entirely doable, but it requires us to change how we're looking at things, get to know ourselves. And yeah, that response of, actually, I'll just go and do another certificate, or I'll just become more qualified, and then all of this will go away and I'll create certainty and I won't be scared anymore.
So I guess when you say about creating certainty and not being scared, are people picking up that they're more anxious than they feel they should be? So you're 5, 10 years graduated, you're starting to feel a bit of maybe not the best term, but anxiety about going to work. You know, it's not that every day is terrible, but just in general, you're not feeling completely comfortable, relaxed, like you're looking forward to work every day. Is that the kind of feelings people have when they're trying to work out why things aren't going how they want them to?
Spot on, Danny. Yeah, exactly that. It's and often it's the first time that that person might have experienced anxiety, so they might not ever have, you know, would have said they were a person who experienced it. But often it's that trigger of, oh goodness, you know, this is happening in my body, in my physiology. And it could be, as you say, that kind of just low level background hum of anxiety. I mean, we all have anxious moments during our week, but when it starts to be a bit pervasive, and it's that Sunday evening, oh God, I'm going back to work, or those 3 days before the end of a holiday, kind of dreading going back, that's not normal. I mean, it's very common. It's hugely common. But as someone who lived 7 years of their clinical life experiencing that completely every day, to now the way I live and work, I don't get that at all. Like, it's completely possible to not have that. And so while that anxiety is not very pleasant, it's actually quite a useful indicator. It's a bit of a red flag of, there's things I need to go and look at. And it's often not convenient. We don't have the solutions instantly. And so that's where our response can be to dissociate from it, just push on, crack on, ignore it, push it away, because we don't know what to do differently.
And to be clear, that sort of there's a difference between the anxiety, or sort of pressure, I guess is a better word, of, you know, a difficult case coming in, or knowing an emergency is arriving, or someone's away sick and you've suddenly got a double load of you know, you get stressful days where you have to step up to the pressure, and sometimes things go wrong or someone complains, that kind of stuff. That's different to just feeling in general, even though you don't know what's booked in tomorrow, that you're not really looking forward to going in. Do you differentiate between those two?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we work in a reactive, emergency-based, unpredictable, highly emotive environment. And so there are natural stresses, as you say, that come with being a vet. But this is a different, it's more anxiety, I guess, on an individual level about, it's sort of that sense of, I'm not sure I want this, what I'm doing at the moment, but I don't really understand why it's making me feel this way. And I don't know how to even start thinking about what I might do instead. And again, when that vet identity kicks in, there's often a sense of, and also I'm the main breadwinner, or I can't afford to retrain. Or quite often when I first speak to people, they know something's not right, but all they can see is doorways shut in front of them. And there's a sense of, I feel stuck, but I cannot see how I could possibly do things in a different way. And actually, usually even just for one kind of exploratory chat, by the end of that session, they're like, oh no, there are ways forward. There are ways forward. And they're not all, don't be a vet or a nurse anymore. 80% of the people I speak to happily remain in the veterinary profession, but they just need to do things in a different way.
Yes. So people, if they're feeling like this, and they come to someone like you, you know, what's the next stage in the process? You know, if I came to you, like I'm 15 years graduated, feeling like maybe I don't want to be in first opinion practice for the rest of my life. I'm not sure why, because I don't dislike it, but it's, you know, it's not fulfilling. I'm not looking forward to work, but I just don't know where to turn. You know, talk me through the process. Like, what would you get me thinking about?
So the first thing is, everyone comes wanting to know what they should do next. So they want to jump immediately to one binary, black and white. What's my alternative? What does that look like? What's the job role? What's the title? And actually, there's a process to go through before you can get that level of clarity. So actually, the first part of the process, and I see people relax when I say this to them, is actually, we just need to go on a fact-finding mission. We need to gather data, or you need to gather data, in three different directions. And people can do this, yep, with the help of a coach, but you can also do it under your own steam as well. That first direction is actually around self. So as we were saying earlier, the vet identity is a huge identity piece. Lobbing any other huge identity pieces like that of parenting, or, you know, and we've often lost that sense of self. So connecting back into, who am I? What's deeply important to me and why? How does my head work? How does my brain like to take in information, process, decision make, communicate? And also, what aspects of work and working environments, like for me, for example, in small animal practice, as I was, one of the things that I really struggled with was never seeing the daylight. Like, it might sound like a really small thing, but especially in the winter, I'd be in the hospital by 8, no windows in the prep room or the consult room, back out, and I just didn't see any daylight. And for me, that was impacting my life severely. And yet it sounds like quite a small thing. but these things matter.
It matters. I know I can identify that. For me, I need to exercise in the daylight. I need to. And it's something I've discovered about myself, you know, trail running, or, you know, if you don't get time to get outside in the daylight, it really affects my entire approach to life and the way you deal with problems. And and it makes a big difference. Even how I eat, if I'm doing more exercise, I eat better. If I'm not exercising, I eat less healthily. And that affects everything from, you know, mental health to how you go about your day job, doesn't it?
It does completely. So it's those bits of what does work for you and what doesn't work for you. And there has to be no shame, blame or judgment. Because, for example, my brain can work really efficiently for about 6 to 8 hours a day. But if you make me consistently do 10 to 12 hours a day, I break. And I carried massive amounts of guilt and shame around for that. It's a physiological aspect. But when I first went non-clinical and could, I suppose, officially finish at like 4:30, 5:00, I couldn't do it. I used to stay at my laptop till 7:00 and used to drive my husband crazy. He'd be like, why are you still working? And I'd be, my narrative was, I can't stop at 4:30. That's halfway through the afternoon for a vet. And I felt lazy. And thanks to his help, I started eventually stopping work at that time, although I found it really uncomfortable and actually quite anxiety provoking. But we lived by the sea and I would go down and jump on the kayak, then come back, have time to cook a meal. And then what I found was so much more productive the next day, really cognitively functioning so much better. But I had to let go of a lot of guilt, blame and shame that I was putting on myself for the fact that my brain has only probably got 6 to 8 hours of good focusing ability. So it's these pieces of self internally.
They're not trying to trivialize, like, you know, trying to give easy solutions to difficult problems. But what you're saying there, for example, for some people, it might be enough to go down to 4 days a week. So you definitely get a day where you get to go outside, but you carry on doing your job as usual. And that's enough. Or, you know, you get, I don't know, not everyone can go part time, but, you know, you get mornings off or you don't start till 10. So you can always get running every, something like that. Sometimes is that just enough to get people back into balance so they really enjoy their work?
Yes, a massive yes. Yeah, absolutely, Danny. I've got people, clients who can be really happy vetting if they ring fence it 2 or 3 days of the week. But as soon as they go up to 4:30, 5:00, they lose their enjoyment for it. Particularly, you know, we have a lot of highly empathic, sensitive folk in the vet profession. And sometimes, you know, a vet day can kick 10 bells out of you emotionally. And actually, if you then have a couple of days to recover, our resilience means we can be back to feeling okay again. But if you put 4 of those days back to back without sufficient breaks, that can be enough to make the job not enjoyable. So small ways of working differently. And I think there's a lot of really good stuff happening in the profession, you know, around changing the attitudes to part-time working, particularly if you don't have kids. I think it's almost like when you have children, there's almost like a valid excuse to work part-time. But we all deserve to have good mental and emotional and physical well-being, whether you have children or not. So but I think there's a lot of comparisonitis in the vet profession. There's a lot of eyeballing what other people can do. And I've worked with practices where I'm coaching several of the vets, and they all think they're the least good out of, they all think the same things about each other, because everyone's going around with smiles on their faces, but struggling behind the scenes. And resilience for me isn't about toughening up. It's about really tuning into what works for you as an individual and then unashamedly asking for that and creating ways to make that happen.
Yeah. No, that's a very good phrase. Resilience isn't just about toughening up. You know, it's about having the sort of support and structure in place that you can cope with things rather than just brazing it out, isn't it? And I guess sometimes, I mean, for me, when I went for a phrase, I do mainly horses. I do some small animal locoming. But I do, my permanent job is doing horses. And I remember once a few years ago, in equine practice, you do a lot of driving, like a lot of driving, some practices particularly. And there's one, I remember, you know, you'd see maybe 5 horses a day, but you're leaving at 8 in the morning, not getting back till 7, 8 at night. And you just felt you spent so much time in the car. And it was really, I was finding that I was really struggling with it. And I realized that's what I wasn't enjoying, just spending so much time simply driving and not really seeing any animals. And then I discovered Audible, because I love reading. You know, when I was a kid, I used to read loads and loads of books. And then you never get time to read. You get home and you're exhausted. And you know, I've got all these books I've never opened. And so I subscribed to that. And I absolutely love when I get a long journey now. So I'll get another couple of chapters of my books read through Audible. And it turned from being the reason I could have almost quit veterinary practice to one of the best things about veterinary practice is that I'm being paid to read books while I'm at work. And it's what I would be doing my own time.
I love that. Has that actually changed your enjoyment of it?
Yeah. And so that was a problem. And that actually, an actual bonus, you know, is I listen to podcasts and books in particular. And yeah, it's one of the best bits about being a vet for me. And I think there must be quite a lot of examples of people who find, you know, a problem and turn it into a solution.
Yes, definitely. But to do that, you have to tolerate the uncertainty of finding your own unique way through that. Because as I say, we've often had to really be sheep to get into becoming vets and nurses. And there's another quote, a lovely quote around fitting in or belonging from Joseph Campbell that says, if you can see your path laid out in front of you step by step, you know it's not your path. Your own path you make with every step you take. That's why it's your path.
That's a really nice quote. I never heard that before. You're right. If you're following preordained laid out steps that someone else has put for you, no wonder you're not feeling happy or like you're in control of your own life sometimes.
But there's no data and evidence on what the right path for a person is. You have to step off that pathway. Quite often I speak to vets or nurses where they're certain about their work, but they're miserable. And in order to try different things, they have to step into uncertainty, try doing things different ways, some of which might work or might not work. So we have to renegotiate what we call failure and also lean into that discomfort of there is no right and wrong. I can't go and look up a JSAP article that's going to tell me what's the best way for me to work out how to balance driving hours and hours a day, because that's so unique to you. You might have had to try Audible or, you know, music or silence or, you know, a few different things in order to find that. And there is no data and evidence-based way. And for us as clinicians, we don't like that uncertainty, or we want to eliminate it as quickly as possible. And actually building our muscles of leaning into that and being willing to create that unique path, which might look different to what everyone else is doing. And that's okay. It takes courage.
What's the next step then? We've talked about how people think about, you try and identify for them, firstly, what they need to change in their life or what's causing the problem. How do you help them find solutions? Do you go that far with your work?
I help them to find the solutions because it's their unique path. I can't possibly know. What I help people to do is pattern match. So we talked about data gathering in those three different directions. The directions are internal, as we said. The external one is around lifestyle. So what geographically, where do you live? Financially, what are your requirements? Those type of things around you and the way you want to live your life. The third direction is what opportunities exist out there. There are ways of structuring that process. So it's not just what could I do, and that being the whole of the working world and everything in it, to knowing how to structure the process of looking for or thinking of things that might be a fit. But then you're bringing them back to this template. So as you start to gather these pieces of self and these bits of information, what are your non-negotiables? What does work for you? What doesn't work for you? Something magical happens, like that becomes this kind of template. And when you've gathered those pieces, you start to be able to join the dots, or you might see a theme of something that is really strong in your core personal values. And you can see how this impacts in the top 10 best attributes of a working role, and also see that in how you want to show up and contribute, and linking that into, I do a lot of psychometric profiling with people. And you start to make sense of these things, but also see where they begin to join up. And it's often from that part of the process where people start to consider pivots or changes or shifts, either in shifting what they're currently doing or starting to think about partially diversifying, that they could never have thought of for a second when we first started talking, because it's only come for a really careful, reflective examination of self, if that makes sense. And then it's around empowering people to be, you know, taking action. So once you have an idea, how do you take that forward? And the bit that, you know, especially for the introverts out there, that's probably the hardest, which is having conversations, interacting, speaking to people, putting yourself forward, rewriting your CV, all of those bits.
Yeah. So just to give us some personal examples, I know you spend a lot of time, well, you've diversified, haven't you? You do other things with your life as well as being a vet. So what else are you involved in?
I'm on my seventh diversification. I think vet-led might be the eighth. Yeah. I've done it so many times. I didn't do it for 7 years and now I can't stop doing it.
So when did you first start diversifying? How many years into your career?
16 years ago. So I was in clinical practice for 7 years. And then once I started to, the tools that I teach other people to use are the tools that I had to find for myself to make sense of not being happy in my clinical work, but not wanting to leave the profession. And in order to find a way forward, I collected these tools, and that's what I teach other people to use for themselves. But once you have them, as soon as you start to get those niggly feelings of anxiety or being out of alignment, instead of thinking, oh God, what's wrong with me? It's like, oh, okay, something's not in alignment. But then being able to pinpoint, okay, it's not in alignment for this reason, and what else would feel better instead? And then how can I find that thing has allowed me to jump jobs 7 different times. So at the moment, I have three hats. I run a floating glamping project down in Devon.
I know, that looks so cool. You sent me a link to that, and it happens to be less than 10 minutes from where I grew up, so in
That's
Devon.
bonkers, isn't
I
it?
know. I know we used to do cross country on that farm when I was in primary school. So yeah, that's how close it is.
So that has been lovely. And it was my husband really who had the idea. He's an ideas person, but wasn't sure how to turn it into a business. I struggle to generate an idea, even if I really try really, really hard, but I'm really good at implementing. So between us, we were able to put those skills together. And then I also do, I'm trainer and culture lead at VetLed as well. So with VetLed, that's around human factors and veterinary practice. And that for me has been a really lovely blending of, I've experienced a lot of leadership and management within the vet profession and coaching and development. And I'm fascinated by people and how they work. And so bringing those skill sets together through the lens of veterinary human factors. And actually getting back out, a lot of work I do with Vet Harmony is with individuals. So through VetLed, that's getting me back out into practice and practice teams, which I absolutely love.
Very good. It's really interesting, this. I guess it's probably worth remembering that when you're in practice and you sometimes feel like you deal with complaints and you see on social media people moaning about vets, and it can get a bit disheartening and affects you personally because it's your identity, as you were saying earlier. But one thing I've learned over the last couple of years, because many people know I'm sort of involved in politics now, and I spend a lot of time speaking to people outside of the veterinary clinic, which I didn't used to. Nearly all my interactions used to be in work one way or another, whereas now I spend a lot of time knocking on doors, going to community events, going to meetings. And people love vets. Like, even people who don't own animals absolutely love vets. Like, you're knocking on doors, no one has a bad word to say about them. It's a really well-regarded profession. And as individuals, people see us as caring and compassionate and trusted. And we sometimes forget that, I think. You sort of get a bit beaten down and feel like the world's against you and every day's stressful. And you take a step back and realize what high regard that we're held in. And I guess that's something people probably become more aware of when they sort of follow your sort of career path and start doing other things, that they suddenly realize that how well regarded the veterinary degree is and how well regarded, vets and vet nurses are in the real world, in inverted commas.
Yeah, definitely. And I think our brain's natural negativity bias means that, we might do 20 consults, and if there's one really difficult, challenging client who's very judgmental towards us, we forget the 19 that where it was really lovely, and you go home really feeling emotionally triggered by that one. And actually, I've still got in my, I'm looking at it now in my office, a collection of cards, letters, and things from lovely clients because there's so many people that deeply, deeply appreciate what we do and what the profession does. But it's so much easier. The people who are not happy shout so much more loudly generally. And so partly it can be training yourself to tune into or remind yourself. And I quite often encourage my vet clients who are still in practice to keep a kind of success. At the end of the week, what went well? Where did I really actually feel like I did know what I was doing with that case, or get positive comments? And actively training our brains to filter those in and focus much more on those. And that's not to say we don't have stuff to learn, but yeah, I agree. I think as a profession, it's good to take a step back and pull up that broader lens, as you say, that even now, if people ask me what I do, I will still say I'm a vet, even though that then involves a long, waffly discussion of, well, no, I'm not in clinical practice anymore. But and people's eyebrows still disappear up because they're like, oh, wow, And yeah, I agree. I think it's a fabulous, amazing profession. It's challenging as hell at times, but I would never leave it. And I think it's a great place to be.
Very good. Well, we will definitely be sharing your links, and we'll in Vet Voices, when we share this podcast, I'm sure people will have some questions. So hopefully you'll be willing to answer them, and there'll be a bit of discussion from this, because it's been a very interesting chat. And I think we might do another one, if that's okay with you, at some point soon, because you see, we barely scratched the surface of this. I was just thinking now about, I was talking earlier about how I started listening to audiobooks when I was driving around. And the only people that probably didn't enjoy it were some of the vet students, where you got like a 2-hour drive, and I happened to be listening to a biography of Genghis Khan or Charles Dickens.
Awesome.
Yeah, you think, let's hope they enjoy it. But thank you for your time, Jenny.
Oh, you too. Thank you very much for having me, Danny.